At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
So, yeah.
Now you know how the sausage is made.
Ah. Yeah. You know, I bought a microphone. I'm staring at it. I don't use it.
Are you seriously? Come on now.
All this sweet audio you've been hearing for 18 episodes.
Yeah.
Just the old MacBook Pro.
Well, at least it's a pro. I've got an Air. Let's play this game. Who's got the oldest computer?
Oh, mine's pretty old. I don't think it's me. I think I got this 2 years ago when I left Food Network.
Oh, there you go. I got this. It was like the summer of 2016. And the model is an early 2015. It wasn't like, you know what I mean? It had been on the shelf.
Sure, sure, sure.
Still hanging in there.
I mean, yeah, we haven't had any issues. Yeah. Oh, you're getting a little glitchy. No, I'm just kidding. I'm just messing with you.
That's messed up. That's really...
Yeah, I'm
now
sorry.
That you know. That's like looking at a man's bank account and then questioning his life choices. Oh, I do it all the time, frankly. Yeah, I do.
You look at other men's bank accounts?
No, mine. Yeah.
Got it.
Yeah, I guess it's different when you're just, you know...
You didn't have a home computer, did you?
No, we did. We did. My man, you know, talk about... I not only did I have a bad home computer, but I think it's really reflective of my dad just not really seeing technology for what it was. I think he looked at technology as someone who bought electronics in maybe the 70s. You're like, oh, yeah. Let's get that thing. And that's it. Like, we're done. Yeah, yeah. Like, we bought a VCR. We don't need a DVD player. You know? We're just going to ride that out. No, I mean, I'm like, but that was in 1985. Our computer came from a Radio Shack. It was a Tandy. It was late-breaking technology because the disk went from a 5 1/4 floppy to a 3 1/2 disk. It was the era of the disk drive. Yeah. The keyboard was attached to the mainframe. The monitor was tube and heavy. It was color. The printer was matrix dot. And I had that computer from 1985 to... Well, they never got rid of it until it was time to leave the house. I had that computer through high school. I was turning in papers... and it looked like something from Matthew Broderick in War Games. Like, here's my essay in dot matrix. Yeah.
Was that the blue screen with the white type?
That would be a monochromatic monitor. What I'm talking about is a printer where the letters are actually little dots. Like, if you look and the paper... had perforated edges with holes in it.
Those I remember. Those I remember. Huh. Okay.
God. It's like the land before time for you right now. You're like, yeah, yeah. Abe Lincoln was there holding a candle while I wrote my essay.
Yeah. Well, I don't remember a time... I don't remember a time without computers. I think we always had one. I mean, I know that's not true. We probably had one once I was like in elementary school, but yeah. No, I mean, it was like, it was the AOL chat room machine. It was the download pictures you're not supposed to machine. It was the play Doom machine. You know, it was all the things you need. Yeah.
Yeah. AOL chat room. It's funny. I felt kind of sad when, you know, what's interesting is like, and a lot of this was through adulthood, but I literally, I had friends who would post on social media, like, we were sad when they shut down Friendster. We were sad when they shut down AIM. I mean, iChat, I had iChat on, wait, maybe it wasn't on this computer. Maybe it was dead by then. But, like, these were all, like, very big things. Very big things. Important things. Friendster, you know, wasn't a big MySpace guy. Was that, do you remember MySpace?
Yeah. I had MySpace. MySpace was for ranking your friends in sequential order. Some people fell off entirely. I believe it was a top eight you could have.
Top nine, right? Was it top eight or top nine?
I think it was eight. I don't know. We'll ask Tommy when he comes on. He's doing a MySpace documentary.
Wait, really?
Yeah, that's right.
That would be interesting. Yeah. That'd be interesting. I mean, man.
Maybe we'll just bring him on and just say, hey, was it top eight or top nine? And be like, all right, thanks. Thanks for coming.
Yeah, no, that was it. We literally were, that's all we wanted to do. Man, MySpace. Jeez. Yeah. Like, God, what it just makes, I feel like, when I think about this stuff and how it comes and goes, I have like an existential crisis. Like,
about the not climate change, not
rise of
democracy. It's Friendster getting shut down that triggers an existential crisis in you.
You know, I feel like some of this stuff is just out of my reach. I'm like, you know, I'm not a polluter. Like, I actually, you know, I use the compost bin. I love using the compost bin. I actually just composted something today that was like off my body, you know, like I literally was like, why should I throw this away? I nicked myself shaving, had a little blood clot, and I was like, oh. And I was like, I'm gonna throw this away, I'll compost it
back into the
one less thing in the landfill, you know.
Yeah, I do want to step back for a second. You're like, I don't have any effect over saving the earth, but this posits the theory that you did have some sort of control over the shutdown of Friendster.
I feel like there are things that are out of my control. I mean, I wish, well, I try and do my part. I'll compost my blood clot, you know, like, but I'm a small part. How much can a little fleck off my face change, you know, global warming, change extreme weather, you know?
It can't. But if everybody felt the same way,
yeah,
it could.
And that's well, why I mean,
you got to vote, you know?
Well, you know, I'll do that, sure. I mean, I do that, and I do that. So there. So again, that's why I'm good with the whole climate change thing, because I feel like I'm doing my part. But, you know, I'm a citizen. So I'm going to do the things that, you know, be grateful to have these opportunities to vote and to compost something that I, you know, dried up blood off my face. I'm going to do both those things without hesitation. Like, you don't have to worry about me. I'm the guy, you know. I'm going to do that. But at the same time goes on, and you wonder about one's legacy. You wonder about what matters and, you know, how much I matter. And when I realize, like, you know, oh yeah, you know, like, there was something out there that was essentially how I'd share my existence, my thoughts with the world, and how that could just somehow be gone. And people will never know. My son will never know, Friendster. I mean, my God, like, I felt this way when I saw the Cooking Channel website shut down. I was like, even though it hadn't been updated since 2014, you know, but I was just like, wow, gone. Something that meant so much, that I put so much effort and value into. That's what I'm looking for, searching through the words to feel out these feelings. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I feel like a character in the Minecraft movie, which I saw last night with my son. We watched the Minecraft movie. Shelled out the big $5.99 to rent it. We watched Minecraft last night. You know, it's summer, Neil. Now, this is the time. We're going to watch a movie on a Wednesday night. Weeknight. Weeknight, but it's summer. Watched the Minecraft movie. You know, lots of... I'm gonna field this to you for a proper review. I feel like this is your department.
But, I haven't seen it.
It's waiting for you. $5.99 available on Google, Apple.
You know what? I have such a hard time renting movies digitally, and I don't mean that I can't figure it out, although that's possible. I don't know. It's so strange. I feel like I'm in a battle with the film companies. I'm like, I'll wait. Where are you gonna be on Peacock? You're gonna be on Netflix? Like, I already have all those services. Now I'm also, I can't wait. Yeah. I have so little patience. I can't wait another 4 weeks. Oh wait.
I mean, this is why I'm looking to get the login from you. I'm looking for some login love. Maybe we need to just start splitting this up. This is why we don't do a lot of subs. Very frustrating. My wife grew up in a big baseball family. We like the baseball. For years, I have paid for the MLB package online. You know, I mean, you know, like not through a cable company. Of course not. And it was always very reasonable. It was like 100, well, it's probably up to 160 now. But for a while, it was like 120 bucks. You can watch all these out-of-market games. You could watch them on an app. It was great. But lately, we have noticed that there are some additional blackouts. Now, sometimes the blackouts are fair. It's like, oh, well, it's on cable TV. Well, we have some cable, so that's fine. I'll just go there. But there are sometimes games where they're just like, the team has made a sweetheart deal with somebody. And it's mostly been like Houston Astros games. And occasionally they play a team that I like. And I'm like, damn it, I can't watch this game. But fine. Now, Apple. The machine I'm on right now, the phone that I use, the company that has just snared me into always using their products, is now taking away the value of my MLB package. Because now if you need a freaking Apple subscription to watch a couple of occasional baseball games. And I mean, like baseball, there's 162 games a year. Do you really have to like take that?
Per team, right?
Yes, per team.
Okay.
Per team. Yeah. So the
that's a lot of games. I mean, that's a lot.
162 games. 162 games. And now Apple is getting in on it. Like, come on. You know, why don't you stick to your, you know, your Steve Carell, your morning show, and I don't know, Lasso. Do you pay for Apple too?
Yeah, we pay for everything. We're idiots.
I mean, I understand. If you've got everything, you've got Paramount Plus?
Yeah.
Peacock?
Yeah.
Peacock's you're a peculiar man. I mean, what's on Peacock? Like, what's really on Peacock?
Traitors.
What's that? Is that a good one?
My wife likes it. All of the Real Housewives unedited. You can hear them curse and no bleeping.
I mean, yeah, I tell you, I love. I would not mind, even though it's not the show that I'm exactly invested in. I would love Andy Cohen's job. I think that gig's fantastic. He just sits there and just kind of watches the car accident happen and then encourages them to drink and drive more. You know, it's crazy. I like Andy
Cohen. You know, he actually does have a disclaimer on his show. If you are drinking, please don't drive. He does tell that to the audience at home.
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah. He's no stranger to the drink. That's for sure. Actually, a fellow St. Louisan.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, we're not too far apart.
Who else is from St. Louis? It's you, Andy Cohen, John Hamm, Paul Rudd. That's it, right?
Paul Rudd's from Kansas City. You're forgetting about your favorite show of all time, Sterling K. Brown. Yeah, he counts.
Oh, did you guys bond over that in theater school since you were classmates?
Yeah, I mean, did we bond over the fact that, no, at the time, I don't think we were like, hey, isn't it cool we're both from St. Louis? Like, yeah, we're in St. Louis. I mean, we were in St. Louis at the time. We were, you know, it's not like we were in college going somewhere far away. No.
You were high school classmates with Sterling K. Brown?
Yeah, high school, junior high school.
Oh, all this time, I thought you went to like UCLA together.
No. So, Sterling's a rather accomplished academic. He went to Stanford to study
Oh my
economics.
God, Ollie, that's like a way bigger deal.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, sure. I don't know. I mean, it's
Oh,
still.
I thought you met at like 18. You're telling me you guys met at 12?
Yeah, he was a year older than me, but yeah, no, I yeah, he, I yes, yeah,
Oh, so
no.
you're not that far behind. He's a year older. Maybe in a year you will have achieved everything that he did right now.
Man, I would love anything to get into Hulu the way he has right now. Have you watched any of the new stuff? He's got two shows
Listen,
on Hulu now.
I can get you into Hulu. It's gonna cost you about $6.99 a month. What
Well,
do you need? What do
well
you
played. Well, here's the funny thing. Of all the things you could dangle at me from your NBC Universal to your Paramount Plus, you know what we have talked about on World's Greatest Dad is that this dad has a subscription to every television
You know what
series
it is?
there
You know, my
is.
wife, anytime we wanted to get rid of something, she's like, well, we work in TV. Neither of us, really work in TV anymore because TV doesn't exist. We work in, people are like, what do you do? And I'm like, I work in TV. Well, I think I work in YouTube now. I don't know. I just make stuff. I don't know.
I mean, I was, with these, but right before we recorded our last pod, and these guys were like, yo, Ollie's like a Food Network, and I usually clarify, and I'm like, yeah, I was on cable TV when that was like a thing. I have something to admit. I'm gonna admit it. It's kind of, I mean, I feel bad, but now I'm like, it's fair. I'm just being real here. I'm just being honest. when Cheap Eats wasn't renewed, I did not renew Cooking Channel. Because it was kind of extra. It was like, it's awful. It's
Yeah, of
awful.
course.
But I'm
No
very
shame, no
grateful
shame
to be
game.
grandfathered into Discovery Plus. Still have that sub. I wish I had the Max sub. That would have been sweet.
Didn't even know Discovery Plus still existed.
I have a feeling. We can just talk about whatever we want at World's Greatest Dad. We're clearly doing
You
it
know
now.
why? You know
What?
why? Because we're
Is it?
dads.
Yeah,
So
we're.
technically, anything we say is dad content, you know?
That's true. Yeah, that's true. It's totally dad content. And I think there's something to be said about, our shared history in the biz, as some people would have called it back in the day. I actually think Discovery Plus may have a second life, knowing that HBO Max is now kind of consolidating itself around some of the more, scripted series and movie content. I wonder if, there'll be an acknowledgement that, maybe lifestyle, and obviously, look, Discovery Plus is cheaper than Max. Let's get that out of the way. You know what I mean? So, there's some value there. There could be some value there. No. That was that was a side eye if I've ever seen one. That was a wow.
Ollie, it's July 4th weekend where we are.
You're right. Damn
What are you
it.
guys up to for the weekend?
It's crazy. I don't know if you could tell. This isn't dramatic lighting. We're facing a lot of thunderstorms these days, a lot of T storms. So the question is, like, will we do the whole classic grilling thing? These days we're cooking a lot because we were traveling for 2 weeks in Asia, which, even though Asia, I say, is an affordable vacation, vacations are an expense. So I have been obsessed with general cooking and, being thrifty, economical, if you will. I just turned a tough stew meat roast into steaks. So that was a big win, a big accomplishment. And my next cooking project, and it's rainproof because, I don't have to necessarily use the grill. I have, it's right here, this cookbook, Gorilla Tacos, is a cookbook from a chef named Wes Avila. Wes Avila is a chef from Los Angeles. He worked in some pretty coveted fine dining institutions in California. And then I want to say I came across it in 2013. It may have opened a little bit before then. He opened up a street cart after working in all these excellent fine dining restaurants. And he served tacos, but he also served tostadas and other kind of like, you know, masa sundry street food kind of stuff. But what was on top was amazing things like sea urchin and diver scallops and razor clams and, you know, carnitas and stuff like that. So he has a recipe to make carnitas, you know, the pork taco that's cooked in lard. And the way he does it is, in the recipe, he literally says, I don't make carnitas like they do in Michoacan, in a pot, a copper pot with lard. I make them like Thomas Keller makes confit. And what he does is he takes like a whole pork shoulder with a lot of the skin on. So it's actually kind of a tricky thing to find, but I'll make do with whatever I can find at the supermarket. And then he takes herbs and salt. And he runs it through a food processor until he gets like this kind of fine green powder. You rub the pork in it, wrap it up, you stick it in the fridge overnight. Then the next day, you take it out, you rinse off that salt, and then he puts it in an oven and he roasts it. But here's the thing, he roasts it by, sounds crazy, but he wraps it in plastic wrap. And he calls it oven-proof plastic wrap. More on this later. And then foil, and he slowly cooks it, you know, in a low-temp oven. And it's meant to just be this incredible, rich, fall-apart thing. I love carnitas. It's one of the reckonings I've had as someone with a Arabic name who people, some people will ask the question, like, are you Muslim? And I'm like, well, it's complicated. But for you, let's just land on this. Nah, not really. You know, I mean, you know, Eid Mubarak, but that's about it. Anyways, I think I might pull the trigger on that. Also, he hasn't had camp this week. So part of me is like, how do we keep him constantly off the screen? So I think we're going to make French fries. I'm going to go down that insane rabbit hole again, but this time I'm going to do it in stages. I have a plan. I'm going to probably spend 3 days. I'm going to break up the work over 3 days, so it's not this long slog. So yeah, carnitas. We're going to make fancy French chef inspired carnitas, thanks to Chef Wesavia, and French fries.
Will you share recipes?
Yeah.
The Substack.
Yeah. I have found I've been able to make a successful carnitas with an Instant Pot that beats going out most places that I have access to. As much as Austin, Texas loves tacos. They love tacos in Austin. And Texas itself has amazing tacos. There is not a lot of great carnitas places here at all. Compared to LA, not even close. It's not even debatable. So I make a pretty mean one. What about you? Are you going to fire up the Weber? You know, can you do that in Brooklyn? How does that work? Or do you go to a park? You know, I mean, it's cool.
There are grills at one of our parks, like built-in grills, which I always get a little bit skeeved by because they're just these public grills, you know.
100%. 100%.
You know, you're supposed to, like, be a good neighbor and clean them afterwards. Let's be honest. I wouldn't know what to do. I know there's a thing called charcoal and matches and no. So, you know, typically I'm the guest at someone else's barbecue who brings, okay, you know, whatever booze my wife tells me to bring, and then she'll cook something. So we are indeed going to a friend's rooftop. You know, I don't know if you remember this or are aware that in New York, you know, it is you know, we pay a hefty premium to live in small spaces, yeah, so that we can have access to the culture and the life and the museums and the pulse of the city,
You're
right?
You're seeing Wicked. You don't need to make a hot dog in a park.
Boom. Exactly. And, you know, but so there are folks who have these things like backyards. So you know, you try to become friends with those people, the people that have a little yard or perhaps a roof. You know, there are these buildings with roofs that have have a roof. I mean, we have a roof over our heads, not one we could safely stand on, climb on.
Not for public access.
No. In my 20s, I remember Shira and some of her friends, like they'd be like, oh, we're going on the roof, and it was like a roof you're not supposed to go on. You know, right. But it's like you're in your 20s, so you're just like, oh, we're all hanging out on the roof illegally. But you can't do that with kids. No, so we're going to a friend's barbecue on their roof. Hopefully the weather holds up. And then after that, we are we're shipping up to the Catskills for a few days to stay in a bungalow and pretend we're in 1958 with a bunch of other families. So,
oh, that's what you're doing. I feel like that would be like an episode of Mad Men. You get out of this. That's what you do.
Totally.
That's what you do. You get out of the city. You go out into the country. You know, I have a friend of mine who lives in Brooklyn. He rents, but he owns a little place like out in maybe the Catskill. It's like a kind of a cabin-y thing. And I'm like, I guess that's what makes sense. You know,
it's like you know what line I think about a lot? It was only a few weeks ago, but when we spoke to Matt Bearden and he was talking about the wealth in his daughter's high school, and now he's like, look, there's a lot of these families, you know, the parents did really well for themselves, or their parents' parents did really well for themselves. And it's like, you see, I mean, it's just my neighborhood, like you see people just dripping in money and you're like, what do? And you can't figure out, they don't do much, you know? You're
like, well, that's a whole other thing too. It's like when they don't, you know, there are other people who are like, oh, well, that's good for you. You go get that money. You know what I mean? Like, there's that, you know. God dang. That job at Meta is sounding real tempting right now. You know, that sounds real tempting.
Let me ask you, because speaking of Broadway, I didn't plan to talk about this, but you brought up Wicked. So I got a... No one listens to this, so it's fine. We're not going to get in trouble. I have a question for the ethicist, the dad ethicist, Ali Khan. That's you. Mm-hmm. So we're in, you know, you guys in a WhatsApp chat for the school?
No. In fact, I don't know if that's frowned upon, or maybe we have our own policy, but here's the big thing to unpack about that. Big thing is that for the first couple years while Heath was at the school he's at, still from kindergarten, by the way, he's about to start eighth grade, so that's crazy, right? You know, barely worked at that school. That's why really we moved to Austin. I mean, there was a number of reasons why it all worked, but the primary reason of why we came to Austin, Texas is she secured employment here at a school that our Heath could potentially go to. So it's, you know, we came all this way because it's a private school and we could never afford it, you know, even priced in Austin, we couldn't afford it. Now, any private school, whether it's in LA or Austin, Texas or New York, is going to bring with it a certain kind of, to put it bluntly as possible, customer base. And that customer base is going to have certain characteristics. And it's not broad, but there are going to be some people that are going to be very, you know, it's like high profile clientele. You go to an expensive hotel. There's going to be somebody at that hotel who's like, what's going on? Where's my thing? I'm going to complain. I'm going to have your job. Da, 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 da. And we found ourselves in a precarious situation because she's an employee of the school. And also for me, like, I'll be blunt. Like, and I still feel this way. I'm friends with the help, my friend. I am. Like, I relate to all these people. And you have parents, stuff like that, who just don't view those people as they are I hate to say employees, but people who who work for you or work for a service. They provide you a service, right? And so we found ourselves watching how we would interact socially because you could hear things you don't want to hear, you know what I mean? And put yourself in a position where it's like, oh, this is my employer or these are my colleagues and stuff like that. So we have always shied away from it. And also, I feel like certainly in approaching part of the reason of doing this dad podcast is the difficulty of dealing with adults that you would never deal with, but you do because your kids share some sort of activity, shared space. They go to school together. And I feel like it's just problematic and troublesome. So I try and keep away from it. But it sounds like you're in the jungle. So let's hear about that.
Yeah, well, we've got a healthy WhatsApp group.
That sounds vicious.
And
That
it's
sounds
actually,
vicious.
it's not, it's pretty positive for the most part. It's hey, did anybody get the homework back? I can't find it. Hey, what are you guys doing for after school this year? It's a lot of sharing resources. Sure. Did anybody, sign up to be a chaperone? Like it's pretty good vibes. What happened was this. A classmate of my daughter's, my daughter who's a first grader, a rising second grader, because it's summer, a peer of hers, the mother said, "Hey guys, my son had perfect attendance this year, and as a result, the city gave all the kids with perfect attendance two tickets to Aladdin, the Broadway show. Unfortunately, we can't use them. Would anyone like the tickets?" That's how it was framed. Would
Okay.
anyone take them? My wife replied immediately, "We'd love them. Thanks so much." So now the next day, she says, "Hey, I have a thing. I need you to go grab these tickets." So I text the mom, "Hey, I'm waiting outside. I can come grab the tickets from you." And she comes over with her son, and I'm standing with a friend, another parent, and I look at the boy and I say, "Hey, thank you so much. Zeke is so excited to see Aladdin." And his mom looks at me and goes, "Oh, Cece's not using the tickets?" And I was like, because we had kind of decided, Zeke never really gets to go to Broadway shows, and I think he would like this. And
Okay.
it was that moment of like you thought she was gonna like pull it back, you're like, "Give me the ticket,"
Wait a
So I'm like,
minute, but did it matter? Like, I mean, don't.
here's the thing. So this happened. I feel so uncomfortable. And then my friend makes a joke, they're just gonna drop the kids off together. The kids are gonna, they're, none of the whatever. I have the tickets. And then I relay the story to my wife, who says, "What are you doing? You just say thank you. Why are you giving too much information? Why are you just..." And I'm like, I do. I talk too much. Why can't I just say thank you?" Now, I didn't know that there was a side conversation where my wife told this woman, "Ah, oh, thank you. Cece's gonna love it and have so much fun," or whatever. And then we decided, oh, we'll bring Z. So, this is a lesson to me and probably all the dads out there. When you are sent on an errand, you just say, "I am here to pick up the thing, to retrieve the item. Thank you." That's it.
I'm
Shut
still
your
having a
mouth.
tough time understanding the importance of one kid going versus the other.
She didn't say, "Would any other first graders like it? Would anyone want to take these?"
I'm
Also,
really confused about the
here's the other thing.
conversation. Yeah,
Here's the
yeah.
other thing that my friend made a very good point. He said, "Perfect attendance, you know what that means. They sent the kid to school sick. Come on. You're to be rewarded for infecting our children?"
That's true. I know. If any, yeah, that's I mean, there. Well, I mean, you know, what's crazy is it started off innocent enough, and now there's more holes in a block of Swiss cheese. I don't know what to say. Like, if anything, yeah. It's like I wouldn't even accept the tickets. It's probably covered in germs. All right,
I got another one for you. So Shiri takes him, and I'm getting real time texts at intermission. I don't know if we're gonna make it. He's getting a little restless.
Like to sit through the whole thing.
And Shira's like, look, buddy, let's stay through a whole new world. Shira's like, I'm never gonna see Aladdin again. Like, when am I gonna see it? This is the marquee number, you know, on a magic carpet. Let's see that, right? And they stay, you know, for a few more songs, and then they bail. And on the way home, my wife is asking him, did you like the show? Yeah, no, it was good. It was nice. Who did you like? What did you like about it? What did you think of Genie? And my son said, who's Genie? And she tells me this, and I think perhaps our older daughter should have attended this play instead.
Zeke again?
Well, he'll be 5 in a month.
Yeah, that's a tall order. How long is this musical?
I don't know. But it's Aladdin. Come on. It's like, it's not, you know, Waiting for Godot.
Well,
you know, yeah. It's Aladdin. It's not Rent.
Dude, that's something a theater major would have a tough time sitting through. You know what I mean? It's just, dude, this is, we're in the Doom Scroll era, baby. You know what I mean? There's no, I mean, I remember when we took Heath to see Frozen, and I didn't think about this at the time, but he was 2-ish, 2.5, 2 and change, not 3. I mean, obviously he didn't just turn 2. It was the first movie he ever saw. And I remember really goes, oh, he made it through the whole thing. And I was like, oh, yeah, good point. I forgot about that. You know what I mean? And I didn't realize, oh, he wouldn't make it through a whole movie. You know, that was like, oh, that's a big deal. Because then the next one we saw was the Lego movie. And I remember really like, yeah, he's got to go. And I'm like, but this is the best part. And to this day, I'm flabbergasted that she missed what I thought was a brilliant tie-in. She missed the whole Will Ferrell part.
Hold on. You stayed?
Yeah. Yeah. Are you kidding?
Your wife escorted your son out of the theater, and you, an adult man, stayed at the Lego movie alone.
Yeah, I mean, it was pretty much the end. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But yes, absolutely.
Did you meet them back at home? Were they waiting in the car for you? How did this all shake out?
I think we met in the hallway. No big. No big deal.
Okay.
I feel like maybe I should talk this out later. That was fine. Apparently, I don't remember this either, but she said that we went to the movies, and I was like, all right, cool. Well, I think I'm going to go watch Creed. And she's like, okay. All right, well, I have Heath, you know, and so they watched something else, I guess. Because every time Creed comes on, I'm like, God, this movie's so great. And she's like, yeah, I remember that one time we went to the movies and you were like, I'm going to go see this. You're really making me look at those early years in a different light, to be honest. Yeah, because well, I did. Yeah. I guess. I might have to just, I don't even know if I'm ready. I'll have this conversation with her tomorrow. It'll be 4th of July, maybe when fireworks happen or something like that.
Fireworks will happen, and fireworks will happen.
I mean, we'll see. I mean, I'm hoping the alcohol will smooth it over. It'll be more of something to laugh at.
All these years later, you're finally ready to repair.
Man, you know, you've put some pressure on me. You know, it's 4th of July, and it's like, I grill, you know, to your point, you were saying, like, oh, you know, we don't have backyards here because we have culture. So I have none. I have no culture whatsoever. Nope. It's completely serious. You know, I'm just... I think we might see a soccer game. We're in the jersey right now. I'll have to wash it. I'm going to see our soccer team on Saturday. But, you know, it's weird. It's 4th of July, and I'm like, oh, man, I should, like, make hot dogs and hamburgers. And the thing is, like, it's just 3 of us. Like, when I grill, I'm doing it for the most practical survival reasons. We have, you know, times are lean. Everything's expensive. It's expensive to just casually go out to eat. It's way better to kind of have a to take a international vacation and spend your money than to just go, oh, let's DoorDash something and spend $100 on something that's worth 40, maybe. Yeah, I feel like I'm gonna be letting the family down. I'm like, I don't know. Like I gotta get it together. I gotta get it together.
Yeah, you've got 12 hours, my friend, until the clock strikes
The
July 4th.
potatoes are there. I've got some ancestral bison defrosting. Yeah, I got some meat from like this interesting meat operation. It's called Force of Nature. Yeah, they're
Oh.
like all about like this is the meat our ancestors ate. And it's very like it's like healthy meat. It's crazy. Like I had one of their healthy steaks and I was like, yeah, this feels like I'm eating something healthy. It's quite night and day, when you get in. Have you seen this is just something I see now. A guy who works at the fancy supermarket here, he'll text me stuff. He's a Cheap Eats fan. I met him. He gives out samples near the butcher, and he's like, and the funny thing
The
is,
help. You're always friends with the help.
he has a bigger IG account than I do because he does dad jokes. Oh, actually, maybe we should have him on.
Oh, wait, who's this guy? What's his name?
It's called the Texas Food Dude. Take a dive. We can we'll circle back. There might be a better way to incorporate him, I think. We'll see. But he literally sent me some DMs the other day of like exotic game. Like, hey, look, alligator fillet, ostrich. At this point, I feel like I've proven myself with the food world that I, have something to say and I have some knowledge on the subject. And I'm also like I'm not eating stuff from a shady zoo. Like I don't want to eat that. That's gross. I mean, but there is one or two things that I'm like, I would try the maybe it's because I see those Rogan clips where Rogan's just like, I love elk. You just get some good elk. And I'm kinda like, well, I mean he's an older guy, he's in shape. I mean, maybe there's some truth to it, like broken clock is right twice a day. So, it's just so expensive. Then I
He
go
was
back
right
to.
about that and vaccines. That's it.
Wait, you know what's crazy? I got the jab. He didn't. We're both alive. How explain that to me, And guess what? I will still get vaccines. I don't care what RFK says. And I say this speaking as someone who grew up with parents from the third world who are like, well, that was my sister. She died of typhoid. It's really different when you have like a generation that was lost from preventable diseases now. That's my hot take, Neil. Not judging other people to a degree, just don't hand me your wicked ticket if you haven't had the jab, Inside joke.
Ollie, let's go to the mailbag. Let's
Okay,
go to the
great.
old dad mailbag.
What an episode. When we don't have a guest, I almost feel like a guest keeps us on keeps the train on the
Well,
track.
I feel like we need to impress them, show that like we're actually serious people.
And they actually have things going on.
Yeah. It's true. It's true. Joe from Cranford, New Jersey writes, Ollie, my 7-year-old has fallen head over heels for acting. He's memorizing monologues, watching old movies, and asking to go on auditions. It's not just a phase, he's all in. My wife and I want to support him, but we're also worried about what a world of rejection, pressure, and long hours could do to a kid this young. How do you encourage a big dream without pushing your child into something they're not emotionally ready for?
Wish I had an age on this one. That helps too.
Seven. Seven.
So, seven. Okay. Here's a couple absolute truths. Life is all about phases, truthfully. Some are longer than others. I'm also all about the That's insane. Life is all about phases. Life is going to come with a fair amount of rejection. That's just how it goes. He's seven, and I say encourage it while you can. always prepare them for, you know, an audition is an opportunity, not a guarantee. And make sure you have time to process those moments where you don't get the part, you know. I have a lot of real world experience in being in the shoes, hearing the war stories, and I also, like, I worked in casting for a little bit too, and you know, a 7-year-old won't understand this, but it is, I had an old teacher, auditioning teacher, say once, you know, when you go to a callback, there's 10 people in the room, right? 3 of them can all do the job just as good. There's not going to be a difference, but only one gets picked. And that's when it becomes like, I just don't know if we want a redhead for this part. He's out. You know, I mean, it's literally just that. There are times where people get the job and, you know, it was just something random that happened in the moment. But that's the thing, is like, you're literally setting yourself up for, you know, a shortage of opportunities. It's just the way that is. I remember I caught a great line from Tim Dillon. He said, there just aren't enough jobs in entertainment. That's an absolute truth. And one of the best examples, and it's not a promise of success, but it's just a reality, is Patrick Adams, who's most known for the show Suits, right? So Patrick actually, couple things to unpack here. I watched him in a play in 2004. He actually went to my alma mater. He graduated, or he went to school a couple years after I did, almost the full 4 years after. And I remember watching him going, yeah, he's a good actor. You know what I mean? And, you know, you're watching some play in Hollywood, shabby set. You know what I mean? Most of the time you see these things, they're terrible. And I remember going, this is a pretty good play. And yeah, this guy was pretty good. And then, of course, he gets Suits. What people don't know is before he got Suits, like right before he got Suits, he got a TV series. They were shooting a pilot. And he got fired off the set. And he got fired off the set, not because he was misbehaving, but because the producers and whatever got together and they were like, it's not working out. He's just not the right guy. And more famously is the story about Harvey Keitel, who was supposed to be in Apocalypse Now. Who, same thing, Coppola was like, this isn't working. Sorry, you know? And he got paid a really nice check. He got $1 million not back in 1978 or whatever it was, and left or whatever. So, you know, like, it can be pretty savage, but for everyone who makes it, everyone who has had success, and there's not that many in terms of the full reality, there will be a fair share of those scars, and that's just what it is. And if your kid loves it, he will eventually learn to accept those parts of it and still do it anyways. So, you know, 7, you got a couple weeks before the next phase kicks in. But yeah. I mean, there's so many, man. I remember Jason Bateman, when he won Ozark, he got up there and he's just, you know, he said it was one of the most amazing things I've heard an actor say, one of the most generous statements ever about the reality of this business and rejection. And he was like, you know, there are plenty of years where I wasn't here, you know, and then I got a job again, and it was Arrested Development, and so grateful for that opportunity, and then more stuff started to come in, and his parting words were, you're sitting at home and you're watching this, just know you're plenty talented and you are a job away from being here. So that's the reality of it. It's hard. It's a slog. But the people who've had success weather those scars, they wear them and they still do it. So that's kind of the big reality. It's an amazing thing of perseverance. And we'll see. You know what I mean? We'll see. By 8, you should see some dividends.
What is the? Isn't there a Jackie Gleason fund? No. Who was the Jackie Coogan? Coogan? The Coogan Law?
Oh yeah, yeah. Totally. Yeah. You can't have sleaze parents like myself living off the old. Yeah. You know, it's kind of funny you say that because I was two degrees away from knowing both Jason and Justine's dad, Kent Bateman. Yeah, it was Hollywood days, you know. You always meet somebody who's like, oh, yeah.
How did you meet Kent Bateman?
I didn't know him, but I knew a guy who, you know, was just doing a lot of stuff with this guy, Kent Bateman. He was like always one of those names on the radar, like, oh, yeah, Kent Bateman. He goes, yeah, Jason Bateman's dad. Now, keep in mind, this is like... This is like the late 90s, you know what I mean? So this was pre-Arrested Development, but after Valerie / the Hogan Family and Teen Wolf 2. So, you know, like, even that was not quite the marquee name then as Jason Bateman has become now, which is kind of crazy. Ageless, he doesn't age, you know? Isn't that amazing? How is that possible? Thoughts on that?
I don't think he eats much.
I mean, I just, even the gray, you know, like this gray. I don't know. You know?
I think he has a colorist.
I guess. I spent some time in the chair. The TV gods, the production people, they put me on that path 10 years ago. And then eventually I got to a place where I would kind of keep doing it. And then I'd see certain pictures and I was like, I look like that guy. You know what I mean? I was like, I don't like that, dude. You know what I mean? I'm like, this is, you know, like, yeah, that was the hard part. You look at that hair and you're like, like, eventually, especially when you're fresh, there's three phases to it. One is you go in, you're like, I guess we'll do it again. You get the haircut. And when you're not doing it regularly, like if you're not regularly on set, you're like, uh-oh, I better do it again in case a gig pops up or whatever. And so I would do it. And at first you'd be like, wow, I do look different. It does make you look different off that initial impulse. But then I'd see pictures of it because it doesn't last. So sometimes they can cake it on too much. The hard part is like, oh, you know, try and make it a little more natural. And I remember I just see some pictures and I was like, it just looks separate from this. You know what I mean? So I made a decision in 23 to let it phase out. And then I remember getting a haircut at the top of 24 and a friend of mine who cuts my hair sometimes, she's like, whoa, your hair. I'm like, yeah. Surprise! It was there the whole time, Neil. In fact, when we met, I was still covering it up. Oh my god.
Yeah.
When
did you start going gray?
I mean, they started noticing it in like, I mean, little bits, like on the side, like a little bit in like...
Because that's where I'm at. You know, I'm 40 and like, you know, in the aggregate, it kind of still looks like jet black, I think, but you see
it. Yeah, I don't see it.
They're there, baby.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's not much. You can't really... It's not reading on camera, which is obviously the whole point, the key. But no,
It would give me light highlights, I guess, if I... I'm hosting the new Cheap Eats reboot, by the way. I didn't tell you.
Oh, daggers. Yeah. You know what's so funny? In the weird times where I'm like, what if that did happen? And then I'd be like... And what if that did happen? You know what I mean? You're like, is this...
Wait, five people would watch instead of 12? You know? I mean, come on.
I mean, lest we forget, those 12 are who we're banking on.
That's
at
true.
Least 8% of that, you know, sure. to come along on this ride. But yeah, you're right. You're right. But no, they started in 2014. They were like, when we were putting the sizzle, they wanted me to do, the production company? They wanted me to, and I told a guy this who cut my hair, he's like, yeah, they want me to rinse out the grays in my stubble. Not beard. I just had stubble. They're like, we like stubble, but, you know, it's just gray. So, yeah, I mean, in 2014, like, there was some white there. Nothing like
that. Hold on. So then how do they do that? They put dye on your skin?
Well, this is what happened. I went to the frickin', this is the best part about anyone who works in production. They're like, oh, yeah, just do that. And you're like, I don't think you've thought this through. You just said yes because all you know how to do is say yes. And then you have someone has to tell you about reality. So I went to my guy and he goes, okay, so the stuff I use for your hair cannot touch your skin. You know what I mean? In that way, it doesn't work. And like what they had me do, and this was for the sizzle. I should dig up the sizzle and show it. We should use that. But, and this actually works as a trick for hair if you're like trying to just cover up a little bit of gray. You can do this trick. Mascara. So in the sizzle, they had me keep stubble, and then I took a mascara brush and I would brush my face with it, and it didn't really work. You know what I mean? It's just one of those things where you just gotta let it go. But this was like my facial hair was like white for years.
And it all comes back to just our fear of and our hatred of the natural process of aging, which is literally what being alive is, you know?
Yeah.
Growing, decaying. And so what it boils down to is some suit in the Chelsea Market office at, you know, Food Network / Cooking Channel going, ah, I don't like the gray. Can we tell him to dye it black? It's like, just let him be the human being that he is.
I mean, I think, like, you know, just like what we were talking about with the person, I love how we've unpacked one question. Amazing. Sorry, mailbag. It's still going to stay full. But, you know, it does come down to, like, those fickle little things of, like, maybe not this, maybe not that. And then I think what's kind of funny is, like, in this new era where we're, you know, not necessarily burdened by gatekeeping because now it's the algorithm. You know what I mean? The algorithm has now replaced the 7-8 people that would be the deciders.
Sure.
And, yeah, you know, it's, yeah, now it's like, maybe who cares? I don't know. But, you know, it is funny, though. We do value, kind of, you know, that we value what's simply skin deep. Like, perfect example, we talk about Jason Bateman. He looks so young. You know who does not look young? And it's awful to bring it up that way, but we're just talking about it in a, not as a human being, a person, but Justine Bateman, who, you know, was a, you know, she was a ingenue on Family Ties. I'm sure she's a beautiful person. I don't know her, but, you know, she's one of those people where you'll see those pictures in social media and people will be like, oh my God, like, you know, because she didn't have plastic surgery like a lot of other people do.
Yeah.
You know,
I have a feeling they're not on speaking terms. Is that what you're hearing? Maybe ask Sterling K. Brown if it's true.
That you know Jason what? He was at, when Jason Bateman gave that speech about Ozark, Sterling was there. It was the SAG Awards. It was the SAG Awards. And I remember they cut to Sterling K. Brown, Kelby. That's how you know I know him, because I know what the K stands for. There you go. Or, you know, if you're, you know, a true fan, probably knows everything. Maybe the Wikipedia page tells you. But I remember Sterling was just like, amen. You know what I mean? Just like he knew that. He knew exactly that. That, you know, you never know. Like, one day you're riding as high as could be. You could be hosting SNL and then you could never work again. That is a reality of it.
Sterling Kelby Brown is an Emmy and Golden Globe winning American actor, producer, and podcast host. Mm. Born in St. Louis, Missouri in 1976, Brown graduated from Stanford with an acting degree and later... Anyways.
Yeah. No K, though. The K's not...
Kelby. Sterling Kelby, yeah.
Right. I don't really have a lot to offer, then.
All right, let's do one more, and then let's send you on your merry way to grill hot dogs in the thunderstorm, eh?
I'm not making hot dogs. But yeah.
Yeah, you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Metaphorical hot dogs.
Yeah.
Jimmy from Queens. Jimmy from Queens writes, hey, Ollie, weird question for you. I live in New York City and our neighborhood is pretty tight-knit, but it's still New York. A dad we know came into a coffee shop the other day, and about 5 minutes into waiting for his order, I realized he had left his toddler outside strapped to his bike. I couldn't believe my eyes. I was horrified, but also remember being left in the car while my parents did errands as a kid.
but not as a baby. I need your advice. I wanted to report the incident to a local Facebook group, but my partner says this will only create unnecessary drama. The child is okay, and it isn't worth publicly shaming this dad, according to my partner. But the feeling doesn't sit right with me, that people are just leaving their kids outside while they go into a store for more than 1 minute. This isn't Norway. What do you think, Ollie? Am I overreacting, being too judgmental? Help.
How old's the kid again?
It says, I don't know. Not a, a toddler.
So younger than a toddler.
Yeah, like a toddler. I don't know.
Well, look. Regardless of the age, and, you know, I don't know. I don't live in Queens. You know what I mean? So I'd have to be able to, like, quote, read the room. But I know this. At the end of the day, what's more important? I think what's more important is making sure the kid's safe and, you know, reporting someone or, you know, child protective services or calling the cops or doing all that stuff. And I'm speaking generally here, like, sometimes, like, you know, bringing in some sort of authority for some punitive measure isn't really solving the problem, right? You know, like, of course, part of me is like, oh, man, you know, hey, if you got to run into the store, I'll watch your kid, but that's creepy. Do you want a stranger saying that? No. But, you know, there's got to be some kind of middle ground. It's a little tricky because, you know, part of you is like, you know, you kind of want to mind your own business to a degree. I'm thinking about it from that person's shoes, but I feel like, generally speaking, there's got to be a way where you can, you know, address that concern, but support the person, you know, and keep the kids safe. It's a little tricky, you know, it's a little tricky. And maybe it's one of those things where it's like, maybe you bring the kid into the store. I don't know, you know, like it's, I don't know how little this kid is or whatever, but, you know, God forbid something bad happens, then there's nothing but regret there. So, sure. You know, it's, again, the last thing you want to do is, you know, put this kid in any kind of danger. And sometimes that danger could stem from the kid just not being around their parent, you know, even if it seems like they're not maybe doing the best thing in the moment for that kid. So I'm kind of hesitant, you know, like, I think you'd have to really be there in the moment to be able to approach that person in a supporting way. So if you can figure that out, cool. But right now, like, I got to be in the moment. And again, you got to approach it the right way. And I do think it's not about just calling a, you know, some sort of authority figure for some sort of punitive measure. You know, I think It's just about how can you help this person out right now? Because clearly they're just trying to, you know, do something and get stuff done for their family, you know?
Yeah. Well, and what do you think about crowdsourcing the situation on one of those Facebook groups and saying, you know, without naming names, hey, parents, you know, saw something happen recently where, you know, a kid was left outside for a few minutes. And, you know, I know we live in a safe neighborhood, but, you know, how does everybody feel about this? And, you know, am I overreacting?
You know, this is the thing is, in my opinion, you're just going to be asking a bunch of people who weren't there in the situation. And that's my take on it. My take on it is I have to be in that situation to kind of go, okay, this is fine or this is not fine. You know what I mean? Like, how short of a time are we talking about? What's the situation on that street or whatever? I generally, like, I feel like when you get into forums where people can chime in, they're not going to get any more context than you have from being there. We get this email. I don't know if you guys have this. It's some digital thing, so you probably do. It's called Nextdoor. Have you ever heard of that?
Yeah, I'm not on it, but my wife will sometimes go on it if we hear something loud.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. If we hear something loud, and let me tell you, my friend, it just becomes these like message boards. It's like Reddit, you know? Like, you know, if you post this on Reddit, you can see what people can be like when they don't have the appropriate context. I think we have enough freaking talking heads trying to make important decisions without really having appropriate context. So that's my hot take. You know, I don't have the right context. I do know this from what you told me is how can we, to me, in my opinion, what you want to do is how can we support this person? You know, how do we support this person? How do we support this person? And by ensuring their child's safe, because obviously I think that's what everybody wants. So there you go. Next door. Ooh, I heard a bang. Let me get on next door. Next door. My God. People go off the rails there, baby. You know, they go off the rails. I guarantee you put that on the Facebook group. Look what they say to us. And we're just two guys who talk about nothing.
True.
Under the guise of saying we're the world's greatest dad. And we literally talk about nothing. You know.
And so are you, listener.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. I'll see you next week.
Yeah. Do you have any 4th of July? World's greatest dad. The world's greatest dad. And he calls it.